Because we put Beth up front, we need to approve our consent agendas. Can we do them all at once, Nathan? Yeah, so we're doing them together rather than separately, so.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. And now that leads us to audience participation, our patient audience here. Does anyone have anything to share today? No? Okay. These meetings aren't as exciting as they used to be, I guess. We'll get there.
Yeah, we still have an audience participation at the end.
Oh, Dick's holding out for that one. Okay. So now we move on to our operations report, which, you know, Pam's not here today, of course, and so Nathan's filling in for her. So I'll hand it over to you.
Okay. Thank you, commissioners. Mm-hmm. Always wanted to say that. Thank you, commissioners. Good evening. No, I'm kidding. It's nice to be here with you tonight. I think Pam's done a good job of submitting this report to you. It's on the website. I don't want to belabor it. It's for December 2019. We will get January's to you once Pam is back full-time.
Yeah.
I want to reassure the public that she is okay, but she will be out temporarily. So I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, what you just heard with Beth is really the bulk of what we do. I mean, we have the one levy, well, we have two levies, but the PhD specific levy is something like 93% goes to PSELF. We hear from them twice a year for about an hour each time, but really that's, you know, that's the most significant expense that we have. We don't report on it monthly like we do the rest of this stuff, but we should just keep that in mind as we go through this report. We're very lucky to have PSELF. They're a wonderful partner. We levy the public about 40 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. And in return, we get this hospital, which provides this huge array of services. And you, if you compare us to the situation on, say, Orcas and Lopez, where hospital districts there levy 68 cents and 75 cents respectively, and they have clinics rather than an entire hospital, our taxpayers get twice the service at half the cost. So we're very, very fortunate at Peace Health as partners. Really, really lucky. So I think that's the most important part. The remainder of our operations, I think Pam covered pretty well for December. It's mainly myself and Pam and the commissioners is most of what the rest of the money goes towards, and operations, various things. For instance, we spent some money on the long-term care project. We gave Inter Island Healthcare Foundation $15,000, which is their feasibility study. Pam has written up a year-end thing here in her report. Let's see. It saw the leaving of the EMS chief and the hiring of a new EMS chief, Carl Kutzing. He does fine. I got your back. No, we're really lucky to have Carl. He does an amazing job. We continue to work on the long-term care project, and of course we have the Citizens Advisory Group recommendation, and then that project is continued with the Integration Steering Committee. Additionally, we had four new PhD commissioners taking office at the end of 2019, and that's a lot of what December was involved with. Pam also included some information here, some year-end budgetary information. The bottom line is that we were about $10,000 in the black, which is really, if you're a government agency, that's a pretty good place to be. If you're a company, you're maybe a little worried, but as a public agency, that's a pretty good place to be.
We would have been better if we hadn't had so many public records requests.
Didn't help.
We're working on that.
And we had a lot of special projects in 2019. So I'm happy to answer any questions. I know December was a while ago. Pam may want to talk more about 2019 in review, but I think that the summary here was pretty good. So does anybody have any questions they want to ask or anything they'd like to talk more about?
I don't.
Okay, then I don't have anything further for you.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
I'm going to hand things over to Chief Putzing.
Good evening, Commissioners. I have given you my operations report for the month of January, and I think you've all had a chance to take a look at that, so I'll try to just punch up some of the highlights, wanting to let you know that we have 75 runs for the month of January, so we're a little behind from the year previously, about 10% less.
Is that because of the snow and people weren't doing anything? Why is that?
Well, it should have been fall.
It
should have
been more. They would have had a lot of
you would think. What I'd like to say is we've been good at educating our community to take care of themselves and not doing
stay
silly
home.
Things.
Yeah.
It's a good sign when those numbers go down.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, yeah. And basically, and you've heard both Chief Collins and myself say, it's a good thing when we're not busy because we're doing right by the community. Mm-hmm. We're preventing things, we're educating people, so it's okay. Basically, our response this year, our overall response time for January was 6 minutes and 48 seconds. So 97% of the calls under the 20-minute benchmark for a suburban area. And then really the other big highlight is in town, which technically the town qualifies as a suburban area by the standards put out by the North Region.
Right.
We were able to get to our town calls in 5 minutes and 33 seconds, which basically the benchmark for just aid, not ambulance service, is under 8 minutes, and 81% of our calls match that, which is great.
Yeah.
So we're making progress. In terms of the finances, we're 8% into the year. Our revenue is only 2% of our budget projections, but that's not unusual because most of our money comes in through the tax levies. And so we kind of get a big influx twice a year. When the tax bills first go out, people usually pay their tax bill in halves. So we'll see that kind of catch up eventually. The expenses, we're at 7% of budget projections, and that makes sense. Even though that a lot of those, if you'll look through the reports, you'll see a lot of the expenditures are very, very high in terms of the percentage because they're a one-time payment. They get paid at the beginning of the year. The one thing that I did want to point out to you is, and you may have caught it, is the insurance payment was like 353% of what was budgeted. The reason being that there's an operations portion of the insurance, and then there's a administrative portion of the insurance, and I think it all got lumped into one because I went back through, and if you can just take a moment and go to the expenditure status report, if you have that available, and you take a look at page 64, you'll see there's a grouping of insurance, and that's all under administrative. That's about in the middle of the page, right? Mm-hmm. And it shows that we had appropriated $15,700 and nothing was spent. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back a little bit further on and you get to page 67. And up to the top of the page, you'll see that there are other insurance expenses and those are listed under operations. And that's budgeted at $49,900.
Mm-hmm.
And when you combine both of those payments, both the administrative one and the operation one, when you look at what we total paid out, we're at 57% of what was projected, which is much more in line. So I'm thinking what happened was that as we made the insurance payment, instead of breaking it out for these different line items, it was all lumped under one. And it showed up as the 353% above normal in that vehicle insurance.
Is that a BARS code issue?
Just the BARS code issue just had not been broken up correctly. So I'll ask Heather to take a look at that and we'll see if we can correct that and make that fit better. But that's where my analysis of that showed that was one of the issues. And I wanted to point that out to you rather than you kind of go, what? So that was my plan behind that. GEMTs were about 5% into what we expect and what we budgeted for. Our cash and reserves are at $1,600,000 and change, which is about 7.5 months of operating expenses. So we're good and we're solid there. To let you just kind of, again, going through some of the highlights, one CPR class, but we have had a, early in February, there was a wilderness first responder class at Camp Orkaila, and that was well attended. And we're coming up with a wilderness refresher class, which a lot of our EMTs are able to keep their certifications current, and that's coming up just this weekend. And five of us are heading over for that to make sure our certifications are current. So we'll be doing that. All the instructors through the American Heart Association went through their recertification process, and everybody's up to speed and good to go, which is great. And then in terms of operations, the auditors completed their visit, their last site visit. We're scheduled for our exit interview. It's the 19th mm-hmm. of March. So I know Commissioner Lindstrom and myself are going, Pam's going, superintendent, and I, Heather's, our executive assistant, is going to plan on going as well. So at least the four of us will be there to talk with the auditors and see how well we did.
And anyone else, well, I think Everett won't be here. But anyone's welcome to call in as interested, as long as we're not.
We believe that going to them in Bellingham is just cheaper than having them come out to see us. We can kind of piggyback some stuff and be a little more cost effective that way. My preliminary discussions with them are that they didn't foresee any sort of findings, which is kind of the worst case scenario in an auditor. The next level down is. Trying to remember the term.
There's material.
It's got, to do with a management letter. Uh-huh. And they'll explain what those kinds of things are. They weren't sure if we had any issues that were at management letter level, or whether we had things that were just part of an exit interview and pieces that were, you know, need improvement. There's always going to be pieces that need improvement. Mm-hmm. If we come up with a, you know, they say, we can't find anything, then they haven't done their job. There's all, like I said, there's always room for improvement. So we'll see what they have to say, and we'll go from there. As far as some updates there, we want to let you know that Chief Collins, Dr. Corson, myself sat down with our dispatchers. We're looking at how we can kind of transition into an integrated rollout for emergency services, and we're looking at coordinating response on a typical fire call. When they need EMS support services, either for taking care of any victims they may find in a fire, or rehabilitating the firefighters who are fighting those fires. Conversely, when we have advanced life services kinds of calls, we often need more hands on deck, so we're coordinating with the fire department and their response apparatus, mm-hmm. trying to come up with an integrated system. So we worked with dispatch first, we've talked with our command staff next, and we're looking to roll out a more integrated kind of phased approach with that ALS level of service, and that's due to roll out in the middle of March, March 15th. So a special order just came out there, letting everybody know. We talked about it last night at our regular OTEP meeting. So we're on track, we're moving forward with the operations part of the integration. The other thing I wanted to mention as a highlight, Chief Havner from Lopez Island has tendered his resignation. So he is not good. He is finished at the end of this week. He's taking a week of vacation. They did announce that former Chief Jim Giglione, who used to be the fire chief on Lopez, will step in as the interim chief until they find a new replacement.
Who will take over the trauma council?
Probably would go to Director Volk, who serves on the County Trauma Council as the vice chair. So I'm sure
I did send Jay Havner my application, and I sent it to Melissa. Is it Melissa?
Martina.
Yeah, so I sent both of them. I haven't heard anything back from
that. And Lainey and I went to the North region and hadn't heard anything back from Martina either. I'll follow up with that and see where we are. But yeah, we're still waiting to see where that application comes.
That's too bad.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I kind of mentioned too, and I think you all saw the press release, our former chief, Jerry Martin, who had some pending investigations through the State Department of Health, was cleared. That came down in the middle of January 25th was when that letter came out. Yes, and basically they said there was no disciplinary action because the evidence did not support any violation. There were three different incidents were mentioned. All three came back clear. So that puts that whole issue to rest. The press release went out, I believe. It showed up in the Journal yesterday, and it showed up in the Island Guardian, but the Islander hasn't carried it. Not sure why.
It's not in the update.
Is it the update?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there an Island Guardian anymore?
Oh, no, that's right. It was the San Juan Island update.
Yeah.
Not the Guardian. That one's gone. That was Jack Corey's.
Yeah,
he hasn't,
okay.
He hasn't maintained that.
What about the dispatch? What happened with that?
We're still working right now. The only agency that that signed that ILA was Lopez Island, but both Chief Collins, myself, and Chief Williams had some issues with it. We're trying to coordinate something. We don't want to just kind of hit it piecemeal. We'd like to come in with a coordinated thing. We haven't been able to coordinate that yet, so we're still on hold. Hopefully we'll get that done sooner rather than later.
Hey, Chief, do you want
yes.
me to cover a quick piece on that? Because I had a dialogue with
Please.
Chief Williams and otherwise. So a couple of the issues that we saw is that the contract is written, the Sheriff's Office, who is designated to manage that, is not fulfilling a couple of the points in the contract, i.e. the dispatch users group and the budget group. We're supposed to get the budget and approve it for dispatch prior to it going in, and neither of those are happening. And Chief Williams on Orcas found their financial person found some questions in how they're billing it out. So we want to, I'm setting a meeting right now with County Director
Thomas. Mike Thomas
is, I'm setting a meeting with him to talk about that whole contract piece and how we can clear it up and get better information before we sign it. We didn't feel between the three of us, and the only reason why Lopez signed it is because they just signed it like they had done in the past. And we kind of picked up a couple points. The other key thing that we picked up that was a concern of ours, which is why I shared it with everyone, was if you go back to about 2000, I want to say, it always had, I think it may have been more recent than that, it always had all three of the county commissioners sign it. Somewhere along the line, it went to only the sheriff's department head signing it. The contract's not with them, it's with the county. So we want to clear that up to make sure the county council is well aware of what's going on in dispatch before we all go in and say, let's sign it, because I think it puts us in a position of risk. And we want to clear it up before the CODAN stuff goes out to make sure we're all clear on where the money's going and how it's all invested into our dispatch system.
Thanks, Chief. Yeah, I was unaware that I knew we were working to get that, but I know we're getting close to that meeting where we can get those issues taken care of. Some of the other highlights about operations, we did have our annual awards banquet. Thank you very much. It was very much appreciated that you all created a certificate of appreciation for all of our responders. It was signed by Commissioner Lindstrom. Superintendent Hutchins passed them all out. Well received, and thank you again very much. We gave out several awards. We have a Chief's Award, and that went to our former fire chief, Brad Creasy, who still responds with us as an EMT. He's really kind of stepped up. He's a usual and reliable fixture on Sundays. He takes care of things. He was also voted EMT of the Year by his peers, and our Rookie of the Year was Kyle Dodd. I want to express my thanks to the Orcas Fire and Rescue who came over and covered for us while we celebrated, which was
Did they
marvelous.
Have any calls?
I think they had one.
And
I really was paying attention to tell you. It was real important. They called me, but they handled it. It was great.
That's great. great you guys get a night off sometimes.
It's appreciated.
Just announced
another news. Just that's right. 911, I'm sorry, you'll have to wait.
You've got a party going.
Right, exactly. We have received our new cardiac monitors. You can see them all right there. We're in the process of getting them all the upgrades and firmware and all that kind of stuff taken care of. They're just about ready to go. Our responders have had an in-service on them. They know how to use them. As soon as we get all the, you know, the T's crossed and the I's dotted, then they'll go onto the rigs and they will replace the old LifePak 12. These are LifePak 15 version 4. So they're getting to up to speed. The other big project that we're working on is a wellness program for our responders. Heather Vogel is working on that. We're trying to get that coordinated. We tend to check our EMTs for some physical fitness at the beginning. There's a kind of a stress test that we kind of put them through. It's not anything very scientific other than, can you do this when you live in the area? We try to get all our EMTs to kind of go through a vision, a hearing, and a EKG. But then it just kind of sits and languishes. If we get to a point where we see something that pops and it's of concern, then we'll ask them to go over to the hospital, check with their primary care physician. The fire does it a little bit differently. They're asking for annual and or every other year, depending on age, a full physical. And we're hoping that coordinated, we can put together a wellness program that not only takes care of those physical kinds of things, we can do the blood work, we can do the send it out for the lab work, we can take the EKGs, we can kind of go through some of the basic testing, and then again, if anything's out of the ordinary, then send that person on, create some different categories where we can ask for that full physical, add some other mental health kinds of, you know, handling PTSD and critical incidents, debriefs, those kinds of things, and a coordinated wellness project. It's kind of a big task, and but we've got started on it, and we're working and making progress toward that. So that's pretty exciting. EMT class, the last one from the May graduates passed, so that's 100% pass rate. That was 10 out of 10. The Shaw class that finished, they are three responders on San Juan. Two of those have taken their exam and passed. We're still waiting on one, and he's ready to take care of that and all confidence that he's going to ace that thing. Staff training, we've been talking about coronavirus. COVID-19 is the new name for it. We made sure that Dr. Corson was here during our training, made sure we understood protection, doff and don kinds of things, personal protective equipment, masks, face shields, gowns, kind of the new piece that we're understanding is because our ambulances have an open cab. The cab is connected to the patient care area. One of the new things is make sure the vents are open and the vents are going, so we try to create positive pressure from the front of the cab through the back of the ambulance, open a window or turn on a vent fan to kind of keep air flowing outside. So stay clear if you're following an ambulance. Mm. Or at least put yourself on recirculate.
Right.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
Matt, can I just ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Is there going to be a community conversation or education for community members just in terms of things to think about should the virus, you know,
I do believe, and Nathan, did you send that out?
I sent Nathan an email today that I read from, well, it was from Brendan Cowan. And
Mark Tompkins.
Yeah, and it's a good read on sort of how they're looking at it and handling it. I think you got it.
I think it is.
Did we send that out this afternoon?
Yes.
Yeah.
We did.
Oh, yeah, Gail's got it. Gail's got it. Okay.
So the health department does have actually an incident command system put together. Kyle Dodd is going to be the incident commander. Ellen Wilcox is going to be kind of the section, operations section chief, who's going to be kind of dealing with that. We know that if we bring a patient in, we alert the hospital prior to their arrival. We're trying to limit any sort of interventions that we do. Deliver them to the hospital. We know it's a pretty intense decontamination process for us to make sure that the ambulance is ready to roll again. We've dedicated one ambulance for those kinds of patients. Dispatch is doing the screening. We know that we'll alert not only the ED as we're coming in, but Dr. Corsa, and then the appropriate people will be notified at the health department and on. But as far as, you know, a briefing for the whole community, I don't think anything has been set yet.
I guess what I'm thinking about is when the avian flu, when we were kind of doing community mm-hmm. conversations about that many years ago, just reminding the community,
right.
If you have to self-quarantine for maybe up to 20 days,
yeah, that's what's in this letter. I think this letter went out in the paper, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was a
It says to gather food at least for a couple weeks, and that there may be school may be closed. Be ready for.
So those conversations are starting to happen.
Yeah.
And I think they're handling it very, very well. We don't want to cause fear or panic, but we want you all to know it's better than to be caught flat-footed.
Right.
So.
Each individual.
Our president put our vice president in charge of it.
I saw that today.
And I just was leaving my office when it says Thurston County has a case.
Yeah.
Or something. That's new. Or something that was just coming. I don't know if that panned out if it's a possible case, like we had in Everett, which wasn't the case, right? But.
The other thing that I wanted to punch up was that our community paramedicine, the North Sound Accountable Communities of Health, had one of their retreats, a two-day retreat. Lainey and I both attended that one. The big things that came out of that were that we did get the commitment from the North Sound that they were at the point now where they're looking for that sustainability, that being able to pay, figure out a way to pay for these services past the grant kinds of portion of that. The other good thing that came out of that is the EMS providers, specifically there's North County, which takes care of Marysville, North Snohomish County, South Snohomish County, ourselves, Orcas Island, I'm trying to remember who the other one was, the Tulalip Reservation, got a community of paramedicine provider. We've decided to kind of form our own work group to deal with the issues that we're all facing, including policies and procedures, certifications for providers, all those kinds of things. So we're moving forward with that. Trying to get some of those answered, those questions answered. So that was very encouraging as well.
How do you manage the community paramedicine program when Lainey is on vacation?
We basically just kind of say, Lainey will be back soon. We take those referrals, but you know, it's between Peggy Long, who helps with that sort of thing. The communication goes out, the scheduling will happen, but it basically stays on hold until she's back. So hopefully, you know, as we answer those sustainability questions, we can build a more robust program so we're not so reliant on one particular provider.
Okay. I mean, there was talk about bringing another paramedic in and working.
Right, and those things are still being discussed. I'm hoping that we can coordinate some things countywide. I'd love to be able to do that, maybe share some providers, but that's still all very preliminary at this point in time. As far as I've got a section here on our integration committee, and really the highlights there that we've had petitions come in from the Outer Islands who are currently served by the hospital district but not served by the fire district. Pretty overwhelming response, people requesting to be annexed into the fire district. There are two pathways to go that way. We can ask voters who are registered in those Outer Islands. That's one pathway if they petition. If we get 60% of those registered voters, we bypass an election. We can go right to the fire commissioners and say, are you willing to take these people in? And they say yes or no, and we're done. We're at 30% right now, and that was without any sort of active campaigning. The other option is to go and look at property owners based on their area, right? So somebody who owns a very big parcel has more, it's weighted against someone who has a very small parcel. Same kind of thing. We've got about 30% requesting coming in from those property owners. So depending on how we go, we asked for some guidance through the steering committee because really this is the fire commissioners, asked for some guidance from them. They said, yeah, let's see if we can kind of go out, we'll send a letter writing campaign to everybody, both property owners and voters, and see if we can bump those numbers up. If we can get that 60%, that's going to make things just a heck of a lot easier all the way around, and you can bypass the expense of an election. But it's very positive right now, so I think we'll be in good shape. The next big push is to kind of assist the town of Friday Harbor. Their annexation vote into the fire district happens at the end of April. So we're starting to ramp up with some frequently asked questions. We're starting to ramp up with figuring out how we want to do town halls and some education out there for the voters. It makes the integration process of fire and EMS much, much easier if the town is part of that fire district. The path forward is much clearer. It's not necessarily a, if we don't get it, we can't do it, but it gets much more complicated in terms of making that final step happen. So our efforts right now are going to go into assisting the town in their answering those questions and moving forward that way. As far as some of the other things, civil investigative demand, I don't have a real good summary for you yet. I'm still working on that, but I can tell you right now that we've had no news. The last thing that happened is we responded to the Attorney General's letter, had our attorney, Tom Fredman, make a response, nothing yet. So the other thing that I was able to provide for you, and I think that was in your packet, was the market analysis for this particular building. And Bill Giese was able to put that together for us. And the nice thing about that, after you go through all of it, it certainly looks like he's figuring as best as he can manage a two-year, maybe marketing kind of thing. And I'm trying to remember what the exact number was.
980.
980, was that it? And when you look at what's left on our bond, that more than covers it. I think our bond is about
high sevens.
So that was good to hear. Other than that, that pretty well takes care of my report. Do you have any questions for me?
Always. Sure.
Okay.
I've just got a few sort of questions.
Go for it.
Sure. You mentioned that we're trending up in terms of the response times. I know that's been a big part of your report over the last year or so. Do you have some historic data that we could see that it would be easy to put together? Because I'd love to kind of show that improvement, actually, especially over the next couple of years when there will be opportunities to spread that with the public.
We started, it's 2020, so we started with a new reporting program. Let's see, it's 2019, 18. I think it was the middle of 2016. So getting that data from that point is much easier than trying to go back further, because we changed billing companies, we changed reporting, programming as well. It's harder to data mine that because we've kind of severed that relationship.
But it's a few years worth of data.
I get it. So the same kind of reports that I gave you at the end of the year, we can generate that for, we did it for 19, we can do it for 18, we can do it partway through 17.
We also made an investment in staffing too last year.
That's correct.
Having two extra employees. So that actually is probably why our response times. So is there somebody responding from the station?
And moving 24/7,
right.
24/7, not just during business hours.
Right.
It was that there were two EMTs during business hours. It was when I worked as the operations director, I put it up 40-hour week, and that was 4/10s. Our logistics coordinator, Adrian Johnson, put it in 4/10s, and we overlapped one day. So that way we covered all 7 days of the weekend. It was kind of from 8 to 6. So that made for better response times, but the evenings weren't as robust. And so now with 4 full-time EMTs going 24/7, our response times and our shoot times, flex times are much better. So, but I can get you anytime you're looking for data, let me know. And those years are easy to generate.
Well, and Carl, from the time we had just volunteers responding to the full-time EMTs, it was like 2 minutes.
We were able to ask the dispatch center to kind of take a look at that. It was harder to track at that particular point in time. but we asked the dispatch center to do some data mining. It was kind of intensive on their part, so we had just asked for a half a year, and we were able to look at that and see that we were shaving off almost 2 minutes of our response, not our response time, but our shoot time, from the time the page went out to the time the ambulance were rolling. And again, we haven't really done a big deep dive into terms of whether or not we were staging. Oftentimes we'll get a page out that says that, you know, airlift is inbound and it's 20 minutes. So that kind of changes that shoot time, because we get the page and we don't roll for quite some time, because there's no sense in doing that, sitting in, you know, just basically at the helipad. So we don't mine those out. We don't take a look at where we were necessarily staging. Or the other big factor on that is we're responding to a primary call, and before the call is completed, another call comes out. That's basically a whole another mustering of volunteers to come in and take care of that. So those we haven't really looked at. I'm just using raw numbers because it's easier. You know, it would take a little bit more to try to get and refine that data. But it all depends if we want to do that, if we want to make that deep dive, we can do that.
I had one question, and this is probably just me not understanding the financials, but on the monthly financial statement by fund, we show a beginning balance of 1.448, basically, million. And then on the revenue detail report, we show a beginning balance of 1.646. What's the difference on this?
I think that it has to do with the kind of the lag between what's reported and then as it comes in later, or what gets paid out. There's always a little bit of a lag in there. And I'm not quite certain, and I can't give you a very scientific.
Thank you. The top part, your 1.4, mm-hmm. is what is in cash. If you look at the bottom of the report, you're going to see what is in investment, and that's the 300. Your total is the 2.
Right.
So you have to look at both what cash on hand is and then what the investment account
right.
is.
Right. So, like, when I report that in the operations report, it's basically what shows up here. So you're looking at the monthly financial statement by fund. Right? It starts at the 1.4. It takes a look at what came in, what got paid out. It comes up with that 1.289. You add that plus the 343, which is an investment, and that's the number I report on, where I say that's our total, and that's our cash on hand, and that comes out to the 1.6.
Okay, maybe I should follow up with you offline. So I'm still not totally understanding why, if they both start on the first day of January and they both say beginning cash that day, why they have different numbers. But why don't I check it?
All right, perfect. And I understand your question better, and thank you, Chief. That helps. Yeah.
One's checking account, if you want to draw the other analogy, one's checking account, one's savings account. Adding together is what your total cash is.
But well, yeah, I'd be happy to go over that with you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I've got four more here.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I'm joking. Okay.
Oh, I do have one other thing. We talked about the end of year report, the financials that I gave for 2019.
Right.
We did get the 13th month, didn't change expenditures. All it did is there was about $14,700 more in revenue that came in. Mm-hmm. So that's the only number that would change. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, everything else in that year-end report is gold.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right. So now we move on to unfinished business, which ties into what you just said, bringing up the EMS reports. So we had talked about having a special meeting to kind of go over 2019. And, you know, we've had a special meeting where we talked about pyramids and... it's a little overwhelming because we have so many things in a special meeting that we need to cover. So, I'm thinking a special meeting is necessary in the next few weeks if possible.
excuse me.
And we can schedule that at some point. Is that,
can we schedule it now?
Share on that?
I mean, do we want to just lock it in? Nice to be here now. Everybody's here? Present?
Calendars? It's easier for Nathan this way.
Oh, yeah, it saves me a lot of time. However, I don't mind calling you all and figuring it out. Just up to you guys.
You're so accommodating.
I know, it's ridiculous.
I'm looking at yours.
I have to.
Yeah, where's your calendar?
Oh, right up here?
Oh, my God, are you kidding? No way.
Yes, of course I'm kidding.
But you are superhuman. Oh, my God. That's
a color code.
So I'm gone the whole week of the 9th.
You're gone the week of the 9th.
Yeah. And I'm back, but off island for the auditor on the 19th. I could do it earlier that particular week.
What about, what's the 18th looking like for people?
I'm going to be off island.
Oh, on the 18th.
And
okay.
To be there on the 19th. Yeah, okay. I think off island.
What about St. Patty's Day?
Was there anything? Was there a steering committee meeting on St. Patty's Day?
We're talking about that on the 17th. Steering committee.
Did we decide what time?
It's going to be morning or midday,
it's
though.
It's going to be morning to midday.
We don't.
Yeah.
But as long, we would meet in the evening
anyway. Yeah, I think the
17th. So we can do it. We can do it more.
Yeah. We have club meeting
in Canada.
It doesn't
mark 17th.
No.
It does not.
Green beer.
What about Monday the 16th?
Well, that doesn't work for me either. I'll be gone.
You're gone that week.
Right. Oh. So after.
Oh, you guys don't.
Yeah.
Are you home? Are you back the 17th? What day are you back?
Well, in theory, we arrive back in the U.S. on the 16th. I don't know if we'll be back on the island even on the 17th.
You could have coronavirus, so we want to wait
right.
a couple days.
We don't know.
Oh, my God.
She said the magic words. Watch out. They're coming. What about next week, though? If the second and third weeks of March
week.
Don't work, then
right.
it's got to be...
The fourth week?
Because the fourth week is our regular board meeting, and we could do it that day. We could do like Tuesday special board meeting, and Wednesday the regular board meeting. But it's a lot of board meetings.
Man, I got to work on the mainland the 24th, so I can't.
So it's probably next week.
Next week, the week.
Oh, you're talking about next week.
This week, right?
Oh.
Next week.
Yeah.
Oh.
A week from today, or five days
from
today, or something like that.
I could do a week.
I could do a week.
Yeah.
That would
wait.
Be
the fourth.
Yeah,
I think I could do that.
I'm going to be on the mainland, but I'll be catching the 210 ferry home. So,
but does that work, Trish?
Are you talking about Wednesdays?
Yeah,
Wednesday.
As long as we don't meet here, the first name class.
Schedule. We were thinking our special meeting should be at our own
Perfect.
Office.
Yeah, you want to do like 5:30?
Yes.
Five.
Is that good, Nathan?
Before?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Really sure.
Okay.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
It would be useful if you guys would. Make sure to specify, though, what you want from staff that day.
Of course.
I want a catered dinner, doggone it, because I'm going to be gone from 5 in the morning. So, just joking.
Yeah.
I'll take a hamburger.
Yeah. Catered meal of French fries, Commissioner. Yeah.
Trish is bringing dinner.
I could stop at McDonald's on the way home.
Oh, gross.
So March 4th, 5:30, though, is that what we're...
Yes.
March
okay.
4th, 5:30, yeah.
And
I think a table and chairs.
I think...
What else do we...
Kyle, should you and I get together and just work on an agenda for that?
We could.
Yeah.
I think we've pretty much covered, actually,
we
a lot
did.
Of the
we,
items
we kind
of
have
the agenda for this, so I think we're pretty well
okay.
set.
Okay, great.
Well, unless there's
no.
some changes.
I think, yeah, you're right. We already did it.
We went through a lot of it. And we were talking about
okay.
the financials for 2019.
Fantastic.
And also integration issues, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. And our long-term goals.
Yeah,
right.
Which we have written down, and we are
right.
moving forward on that. Okay, great. Good.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. So we move on to committee reports and discussion. And the first one we'll cover is off-island transport. Was there anything to report?
I made a couple of notes in this here.
While you're looking at your notes, does anybody know, did you guys look at your mail? I meant to bring my flyer in. Did you guys, anybody get your flyer
today?
Okay, so there is a free lunch.
Oh.
Do you know about that?
I haven't
okay,
seen it.
Okay, 2 days, March 7th, 8th, at free lunch, I think at Haley's, and it's off island. Did you get that? Do you have it with you?
I don't.
Darn it, I meant to grab mine. So it's a postcard about this big, and it's from some organization for off island
Transportation,
like some kind of mid-flight.
Air transportation.
Oh, is it the new one,
that?
Lifeflight?
No, it's not Lifeflight. They came in last
it's
year.
It's not mid-flight. It's some other group.
And it's supposed to be some group that will kind of broker all sorts of medevac kinds of things. It happened
it's
last
like
year.
It's some kind of acronym for the name of this group. What is it? Do you know?
It came in last year.
Yeah, I don't know the name.
It's like Chief's saying, it's a brokerage that they will go and find you additional memberships, which is already being taken care of through Island Air, Airlift, or Lifeflight at this point.
Yeah, I sat into it 2 years ago, the same folks. There were a physician group out of Florida that failed. They're trying to make the same attempt in islands around the wherever they're doing it. They're doing it in the Caribbean and so forth. Basically, it's a pretty huge scam. They suggest that for this membership, you will never have to pay out a dime.
And that's BS.
Can't imagine that.
Yeah. We could go have free lunch.
Go free lunch.
We could go have free lunch, though.
We could go have free lunch and tell people the truth.
Yeah.
Eat first.
I like that.
The notes that I made about the off-island transport, I think we had two meetings, the 6th of January, and then we met again the 3rd of February. Mm-hmm. Since our last meeting, we had a couple of discussion items. One thing that we talked about was making the modifications in the ambulance to accommodate the airlift. Mm-hmm. Stretcher, found out that can't be done. It's an either-or kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That won't work, but we did look at the modifications to the Stryker cot that Dan Bacon is actually applying a patent for this modification. We saw it demonstrated in the emergency department. It's a way that we can take and kind of eliminate one set of moves. Generally what we do is we take a patient out of the ED, put them on our ambulance here from San Juan Island EMS, then move them to Island Air, where they're either moved onto another, this gurney that Dan Bacon's modified, or from our gurney directly onto the aircraft. We generally use Dan's because it locks in to the loading device that's on the aircraft much more effectively. And everything says it should work, because it's the same thing. It's only been, nothing structurally has been changed on this stretcher. I still need to get a verification from the insurance company that says it's okay. We haven't changed anything. We haven't changed the mount. We haven't changed that. Really, I had kind of thought, well, maybe we change the center of gravity, but really, no. Because while we might have a patient a little bit higher than what's normal, we can adjust that on the carriage. It all makes sense in terms of common sense. Nothing structurally has been changed. You know, the modifications that might change the dynamics of where the patient sits on that gurney can be compensated for, but I still need that verification from the insurance company before we can put it on. But it's easy, because what we can do is go down, leave our gurney, transfer in the gurney for that Dan's modified, bring that up, transfer the patient, comes on, pick our gurney, leave the modified gurney behind at Island Air, and then pick ours back up. I mean, it should work. We just need to get that final verification. So that's happening. We're still in process with that. I hope to have that answered by the next off-island committee meeting. We got an update on the coronavirus on the February meeting. Department of Health was there. Both Ellen Wilcox and Mark Tompkins came by to talk about their procedure and process. Dr. Corso was there as well, so everybody kind of got that update there. And then the last bullet point from that meeting was that Chris Martin, who's the executive director for Airlift Northwest, is stepping down at the end of this month. And I think her replacement has been named, but I've heard conflicting things. I think there was one person kind of tapped, and like, there's another word I can't give you exactly that. But the flight nurse, the lead flight nurse from Bellingham, Scott Sander, will be coming and joining our meetings from here on out. So those are the highlights that I have from that off-island transport committee. And Trish or Everett, if you remember anything different from that meeting?
That would have been, you weren't there.
I wasn't there.
Yeah.
No.
No, I don't.
I
think those were the highlights.
That was the, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Was there a CCC meeting?
No, it's no. It's the 13th of March.
Okay.
They canceled. They rescheduled.
Okay. I did speak with Beth earlier this week, and she said they had invited Dr. House from Eventide to attend and moving forward. Gail, maybe we already touched on this, but the Trauma Care Council, anything?
I didn't hear back, so I think I need to I'm just going to I'm going to send it to you, too. Okay, Carl.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens.
Okay.
I don't think it was Martina. I think it was our secretary that comes to this Trauma Council. I sent
Andrea?
Andrea. So I sent it to Andrea and Jay, so not Martina, because it needed to be signed by Jay first.
Before
and then go.
Over.
So.
Okay.
I didn't hear back, so we can get a signature from, maybe I'll email you and Andrea and say,
okay.
Who can sign this?
Right. Perfect.
It's a little frustrating, and my computer printed off the form in a weird way, and yeah, okay. And nothing on the CID, Kyle?
No.
Finance Committee? Commissioner Loring? No, not much.
Commissioner Loring.
Or Commissioner Clarity. Loring, sorry. The Inter Island Healthcare Foundation and Long Term Care. Anything to report on?
No.
Okay. We need to kick that off at some point when Pam gets or is back in
front. Yeah, she was she attended the last one, maybe.
So we didn't have anyone at the Inter Island Healthcare Foundation meeting.
Because
Pam was
Wasn't
out that day. She was not available. And we're not having it in district offices anymore since we don't have a member on the board on the Healthcare Foundation. So they're not, it's not really appropriate for them to meet in our offices. Mm-hmm. So I didn't listen in or anything. So I just don't have anything to say about it.
We have our Community Relations Committee, and Trish, I should let you know that I covered this with Beth when Kyle and I met with her on Monday and just talked about how when we receive information from someone in the community about a problem they've had at the hospital, just how she wants us to handle that, and she said by all means send it to her. And just in ways that we can work together. But we also decided that the two of us and her should sit down together and have a conversation in the future so we can work on how we're handling that. Steering committee met on Monday. And as I guess Carl has already really reported on this.
Annexation.
Annexation and such. And we talked at length about the FAQs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was quite lengthy. I don't really have anything to add about that. I think they'll be revised.
Financial
and,
report and annexation.
As far as finances go, and I think Everett and I have discussed this and are thinking that, our board, being that we have the fiscal responsibility here to the public funds that support EMS and public property, that we, those numbers of the consolidated or the integrated budgets of the two agencies will really help us determine the direction that integration is going. And with all of our approval, my feeling is that we need to bring in an outside advisor that can help us with the financial picture. Potentially, maybe this outside advisor is part of a larger implementation team that we're working towards. And that's, I think, where Everett and I are at.
Yeah, we need to understand where the hospital district, where our numbers, all the liabilities that we have and all the assets that we have, where those are going to divide, what's actually going to happen to them, like what's going to happen to the building, what's what's going to happen to the fact that the loan that we've signed for really was predicated on EMS. We have to think about those things. So we have to look at the bigger picture of what's going to happen financially when the merger happens. What's going to happen to our district? And this, I think, will be something that will be of interest to the fire commission as well, because it'll also impact them, because some monies will go away that goes to EMS. And it will become a burden for fire, and so we just want to have somebody to come in and take a look at it. Hopefully, somebody who's already looked at something like that. I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that has experience in this.
Yes.
Yeah. How does anyone have any further discussion on this?
If I can answer,
please.
Something.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know that as we were first talking about the whole integration process,
yeah,
when we asked Rich Davis, who's our attorney for the public hospital district, he's been involved with several of these integrations. And his first stab at an interlocal agreement covered two phases. One was to kind of integrate the administration, mm-hmm. and the second was the final piece. Mm-hmm. We thought that which included, how do you handle the rolling stock? How do you transfer the medical equipment? Mm-hmm. What becomes of this, that, and the other, you know, the assets that are associated with EMS? We, at that particular point in time, thought that's biting off too much, so we scaled back that second phase, mm-hmm. Looked more at just the administration so we could actually sit down and have the wherewithal that between Chief Collins and myself, we could look at those things and plan what our response model looked like, try to come up with something a little more solid to give you guys a little bit better numbers. Conversations that Chief Collins and I have had say, yeah, I think we believe it's worthwhile. We can take a look at that year one budget. We'll take a look at it, see how those two things combine and where we can see potential savings and things. So I think we can provide you that, you know, at least that initial year one with some highlights as far as where we see that. More than happy to share with you guys the second phase of that initial ILA that Rich Davis had put together that talks about some of those components and how they get allocated and how they transfer over. Mm-hmm. And that might be a good first step, you know, before.
That's a very comprehensive contract, and I did read it, and I thought it was, you know, in my mind, why I wasn't in favor of the original, or the ILA, it was the kind of pulled from that, mm-hmm. was that I felt that the parts, all of those steps, the financial analysis, the organizational analysis needed to be done before anything was signed. Mm-hmm. So I think that where I'm coming from now is that you, both of you, are managing your agencies in real time, and all this, and you have been dedicating a lot of time to the process of integration and looking at operations and how all of your people fit together in response to calls. But you know, I feel that we need someone from the outside that is not part of either agency that can take the financials from both agencies and do some projections for us that really shows the public that we have done the work that says that we believe that this is the correct thing to do. And then we can sign, you know, this larger contract that I believe is probably in the best interest of the